What have the animals done for us? My name is Olga, and I've been wondering about that question for a really long time. And the Other 5 Billion podcast is my way of answering it and sharing with you what I found out along the way. Hi there, animal fans. In this episode, we're speaking with Maria Blasquez. She's a caregiver at the AAP Primadonna Sanctuary, and that's located in the region of Alicante, in the southeast of Spain, on the Mediterranean coast. Now, we've actually heard quite a lot about this place before, and that was in our interview with David van Hennep, who's the executive director of AAP as a whole. And just as a reminder, you can go back 2 episodes, and they have 2 sanctuaries for chimpanzees and other animals, one in the Netherlands, and this one, where Maria works, down in Spain. So the beauty of this interview, I think, is that we now get an opportunity to spend time with somebody who is at the sanctuary working every single day so closely with these animals and can tell us a lot more about them. Now, I think that this interview gets more and more interesting as we get round to talking about the why and the how the chimpanzees ended up at the AAP Primadonna Sanctuary in the first place. And then Maria actually gets quite philosophical towards the end. And I was particularly touched by this idea that when you have a wild, and that is a non-domesticated animal that really is used to being out in the jungle and fending for itself, but when you have one of those animals, it's something that's just like a possession for you. So Maria goes into the idea that actually, yes, you have their body, but in fact, you will never have their soul. And that soul, that is what is left behind in their natural habitat, where they got taken away from. And really, all that somebody does have is just a shell of its real self in their home. Okay, so let's go straight to our interview with Maria. And we're going to join her actually talking already about what it is that she works on in the sanctuary.
Hi, my name is Maria Blasquez, and I am a primate caregiver at the non-profit organization AAP Primadomus.
Can you actually tell us a little bit of a background about where you work today? So what is the mission of this place, and what is it that you do there yourself?
I work at AAP Primadomus, which is a rescue center in Spain that belongs to AAP Foundation, that is the main one, and is based in the Netherlands. So this is a non-profit organization that has quite a long experience. I think was created around 1970 or 72. So the mission is to rescue and rehabilitate exotic mammals, as well as improve animal legislation in Europe. So on the first years of the organization, the main vision was to rescue animals, but at one point the organization realized that the problem was so big that we were not doing anything but mopping on the floor with the tap open. Like, we are doing something important for these animals, but not to solve the whole problem. So on the last years, our policy programs are being more important, and we are trying to use rescue centers to support the policy programs. These programs are focused on the illegal wildlife trade, with a special project for barbary macaques, also on the private ownership of exotic animals as pets, and also on the use of wild animals in entertainment. So yeah, we have 2 rescue centers to support these programs, and every animal that is rescued has to go through all the process, going to quarantine and then to the resocialization process. And then once that is in an unstable group, the whole group is out place. And my role in all this process is to take care of the animals that are already in stable groups and are waiting to be out place.
I'd really appreciate it if you could tell us a story about one of the chimpanzees that you know really well.
Well, every animal is different, and all of them, they have a completely different personality. So it's difficult to choose one. I can't be hours talking about all of them. But we have two chimpanzees living together, Bingo and Antoine, and they kind of represent quite well the situation that many other exotic animals are living all around Europe. Because Bingo is an old chimp that comes from a circus, and he's quite small for a male. He's almost like a frog size or a tortoise size. He's really tiny. He's around 48 years old. He's losing some hair, and he doesn't look like the smartest chimp, you know. So when you look at him, people maybe don't think he's incredible. But he's the sweetest animal in the world, and he's very playful, and emotionally he's very expressive. So he's kind of transparent. You always know when he's happy, when he's upset. And he lived in a circus. He was left behind in a truck trailer with another animal. I'm not sure now if it was a baboon or a macaque, but they were left together in the trailer, and they were rescued, taken to Livorno Zoo. From there, he went to UP. Well, and UP, he showed to have very developed social skills and to be very good with other teams, because he showed this really developed social skills. They knew if a new team didn't get well with Bingo, it was pretty clear that he was not going to be an easy one to put with another team, because Bingo was like, you cannot not like Bingo, because he does his best to try to have positive interactions with all the other teams. And he's living with Antoine, that is his mate, here in UP Prima Domus. He's also a male, and he's on his 40s. And he's a little bit the opposite of Bingo. He's really handsome, and he's really calm and sensitive. But I would say he has more complex personality, so it's not that transparent, you know. He was the pet of a Belgian lady. Later, she also bought a female, who is Prudence, and she also lives in Prima Domus, in another bigger group with more chimps. So as soon as they both grew up and stopped being like adorable babies, they were locked up in the basement, and she built a wall to split them so they cannot, you know, mess around together or be more dangerous or even mate or have babies. So the basement couldn't get clean, and they learned to exchange their feces for water bottles and for food through a small hatch that was in the kitchen. And when he was rescued, he showed many problems to live in big groups with other teams. He was being very aggressive. Even in only female groups, he was having a lot of problems to cope with the relations with other animals. So the only one he can live with is Bingo, because Bingo managed him really, really well. It's a pity, because Bingo could be in a big teams group, but on the other hand, Antoine otherwise would be alone, and you cannot have a chimp alone. They get really, really depressed. So they tried, and they saw that they get on really well together. There's a lot of grooming and relaxing life. So I guess they found a good solution for both of them.
You're saying that, of course, the people that had these chimps had them from very young. So did these chimps actually know their mothers?
They were taken away from the mothers when they were young enough to still be adorable and to create a bond with a human family, but not too little to prevent them to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that they do with all the exotic primates that people buy as pets, is to have them when they are really, really, really small babies, because people think they have like a special bond with their monkeys at home. No, we have a special bond. He loves us. But it's something that is forced by humans. It's created because you had a baby in a moment that needed to be with his mom. And you took away from the mom and you put it in your house. So, of course, he needed you at this moment. But the problem with primates is when they grow up, they are wild animals. And then this bond starts being weaker and weaker because they develop as wild animals. Then you have people that bring you the monkey or the exotic mammal, I don't know, polar foxes or all the animals that they bring to the center, because my monkey bit my dog and my daughter. Yeah, of course. Welcome to the real world. It's a monkey. They are dangerous. They are powerful. So, yeah, I think if they were not taking us babies, nobody would buy an adult baboon or an adult macaque or an adult chimp. When you see the big tooth and you see how strong they are, even the small monkeys, they are so strong and they are really well prepared to live in the forest and to climb and to jump. They are really stronger than we think, even the small ones. So I think just buying them as babies is the only way. And they can wear little pajamas and they can treat them like little human babies. But as soon as they grow up, it's what happened with Antoine. He grew up and this woman realized, I cannot manage this animal. This animal can kill me in a second. So she just locked them in the basement.
And how long were they there for? How many years?
Most of their life.
Okay.
They were there since they were babies and they were like teenagers. They were locked there until we found them, and they were found with this woman died.
Oh, so gosh.
She never regret or say to anyone. Just the family went to the house and found them in the basement. So they spent many years with no light, no air, without being able to see or have any contact to each other or to a person or to any animal. So that's why they have quite a lot of problems now, both.
Last time we spoke, you actually said that there's a waiting list for primates who need a safe home like a sanctuary. So I mean, why is it that we have so many chimpanzees and primates who are absolutely not native to Europe in this position?
Well, the problem is true that sadly we have a long waiting list of animals that need to be rescued, and we only can rescue them by prioritizing. So the priority is given by the situation and also the availability that we have in every department, because if we don't have a space in the primate department, we cannot take more primates. And maybe we have a space in mammals, and maybe we can rescue a raccoon or another animal that is waiting there. So it doesn't mean that the species is something that gives you more priority in the waiting list. But we rescue the animal regardless the species or the age or the health condition. We do rescue raccoons, and we do rescue exotic squirrels and other animals that people can think, they are not that important. But all the animals that are in these situations and are rescued is because they are in the top part of the list for a reason. So maybe they are going to be killed, or maybe they are in a very risky situation for people or for them. The problem that we have is that the space is limited. Unless we have a group that is living, now we are always over the maximum. It's really sad that you have this waiting list and you cannot take all of them. But the problem is that there are too many exotic animals like floating in the air around Europe, because, well, it's a quite important trade. The trade of primates is illegal in Europe, but it's a quite important one. Also, there is a lot of people that buy them as pets and then realize how difficult it is to have these animals at home. So they want to get rid of them. Also, we have circuses and other entertainment shows that are using animals. And when they get old or not useful anymore, they want to get rid of them. We also have a lot of small, creepy zoos breeding animals. So, yeah, there is like this flow of animals going from one place to the other that is always there.
And do the general public actually know that this problem exists?
No, I don't think so. I think nobody is giving the importance that it has, neither the authorities, neither the society. I think we still have to like get really aware of the animals' problems, not only about exotic animals as pets or in circuses. I think in general, we should be more aware about this. Also, the legislation is there, but it's really difficult to implement. It's not being thought as an important problem. It's not that you have a lot of police that know how to react in their costumes when they see these animals. For example, if you Google pygmy marmoset, the first thing you find is how much or where can I buy? So you can see that it's a big problem underlying. When you Google some animals and the main thing you find is the price or how to keep them at home, but doesn't seem that anyone is really worried about it. Apart of the animal welfare, this is also a health problem for people because we share so many sickness with animals, especially with primates, that I think this is the reason it's illegal to have primates as pets. Many of them are taken from Africa or South America. They can have many sicknesses that can transmit to us, and as well we can also transmit to them many sicknesses. So I think the society is not really aware of all the problems that this can cause, not only for animals, but also for people.
So I've just seen on one of those links that it's $3,900, for example, to own your own pygmy marmoset. So that's quite a lot of money. But if so many people are doing it, what can possibly be done to actually dissuade people from feeling like it's a normal thing to have an animal like that or a chimpanzee as a pet?
Well, I think in general should be a little bit more control on internet now, because internet made possible that a lot of people know what a pygmy marmoset is, where can you buy it illegally, of course, how to take care of your pygmy marmoset, which, of course, it's not the proper care. And all these YouTube videos about baby sloth or baby slow lorises or baby marmosets that are really cute and are at home with you, all these kind of things, I think is not helping at all, because the ownership of primates is really, really big. It's not going better. And I think it's because people want to be different somehow and to have something special, because means that you spend a lot of money in your animal. Also, in this case with exotic mammals, they are bought for adults by adults. So I think the information we can give them is really important. It's not about telling kids, hey, you shouldn't have a monkey at home, because a kid can never take care of a monkey. It's adults that want to spend a lot of money and that need to have a minimum facilities that want to have these animals, something that is on fashion. What I would say first, it's illegal. So you are going to have a problem if they see you having this animal. It happened in the past. We had some monkeys in our center that come because a neighbor saw a monkey in the window of another neighbor or something and called the police. So first, it's illegal, but even if it were not, because this is not the main reason, to have an exotic animal as pet, I think it's a mistake that you cannot go back, because once this animal has been taken away from his or her mom and has grew up with people, they develop so many abnormal behavior and mental problems that these animals are going to be captive, in the best case, in a rescue center, in the worst case, in their house, forever. It's nothing that you can go back and say, I regret, I'm sorry. No, all these animals, they have like the sentence for the rest of their life. It's something you cannot go back. And we have many, many primates arriving to quarantine. Most of them, they have a really poor body condition and a lot of sickness, because people really doesn't know how to treat these animals, how to take care of them. It's quite difficult because there is not a lot of information. So they think the animal is okay, but underlying the like normal appearance, they have a lot of sickness and they are developing a lot of bone diseases and many problems. It's also good to think, if this animal that you are having, what does it mean? Because, of course, the life of the animal means nothing, in the point that because you want to have it, you just buy it and put it in your flat. So it's kind of like a slave or something nice that you see in nature and you think, I like this, I'm going to just take it home. So I think this is a part of our education and a part of this thought that humans, we are in the center of everything and everything belongs to us. and we can just choose. And if we pay, we can have everything that we want. When you have these exotic animals, these wild animals at home, in my opinion, you have like the body of the animal. Yeah, it's a macaque or it's a parrot. Has two eyes, two wings. Yeah, it's a parrot. But the soul of the animal is not there. And what makes a parrot to be a parrot is not there. The parrot cannot be with another animal, cannot fly, cannot go to the river to look for minerals, cannot forage fruits, cannot do anything that means to be a parrot. So I think it's pretty sad that people cannot see how selfish is to destroy one life just because you enjoy seeing beautiful colors or having a special animal that nobody has.
Yeah, it's very hard to hear about this. I think for many people, it would be the first time that they actually hear these stories. But in fact, there are a lot of people, young and old, who want to work with animals. And like some people, you have been able to make that dream a reality. What advice could you actually give to somebody who wants to work in this field in caring for animals?
I would say that it doesn't matter if you are a lawyer or a vet or a journalist. The animal welfare and the conservation is so diverse and big field to work in that every help is needed. So I think we just need to open our minds. And some people think, I really respect animals. I really want to change the way they are treated. I'm really interested in conservation, but I cannot do it because I work in an office. And I think this is just wrong. I mean, everybody can work with animals and help them somehow. Everybody has something to say if they really want to do it. And all the works are needed. I think it's a field that is still growing up really slowly. All the animal welfare and all the animal conservation and nature conservation that is related is huge. There is space for everybody. So I would say, people, just do it. If you really want to do it, just do it, because you are going to find the way to do it. And also, the more different views there are in the animal welfare and conservation world, the better. Because until now, I think we have been really restricted to being a biologist or a vet or few things to work with animals. And now we are seeing that social media are really important, that the communication is really important, that fundraising is really important. So maybe you have been working in an office and you are quite good for fundraising. I don't know. I think everybody can work with animals and play a role. Talking about specifically taking care of animals or working rescue centers, first have the theoretical base, like learn the basis, study what you think is going to be needed. And I would say to people to go to many different projects and visit different projects or volunteer in different projects as soon as you can learn, because each one has their own way to do things. And you can learn a lot if you visit as many projects as possible and you have like the whole picture of what is going on. I would say this is very important before you choose the area you want to work in, because when you see the whole picture, you will see that there are so many different things going on. And then I think when you have as much information as possible is when you can choose. And once that you choose something that you want to do, just get focused on this and try to get specialized and try to be good at that. I would say it's really important to know what is going on, because sometimes projects are really isolated from each other. You know, they do the things like they have always been doing it. I think it's really positive for people working in projects and for people that just want to work in the future in a project to see different ways of working.
So how can people come and visit your sanctuary?
We are located in Villena in Alicante province, and we have visits on Saturday mornings. It's just once a week because we have so many animals that are not very happy with visitors. For example, self-mutilation when they see a lot of people. So we try to keep it like under control. So it's a visit to the stable groups where the animals have their own groups and are just more calm, not in the resocialization or in the quarantine buildings, because this process is a little bit delicate and we don't want to interfere. It's also on Big Cats department. And the visit, you have to send us an email or talk to the tourist office in Vienna. And also on Thursday, we have visits for schools because we believe that education is the most important work we can do with these animals. These animals, they cannot come back to the wild, but we can explain people that even when they cannot go back to the wild, that is where they belong, we can give them some respect. And the visit that people do here is a little bit different. If one day it's really hot and they cannot see one kind of animal because we thought it's better to keep them inside because it's too hot outside, then we explain them, you are not going to see, for example, pigtails today because they are old and they have to be inside. People have to understand that animals are not there for them to see them. So I think the visits also change a little bit your mind compared to zoos or other places that you go and you always see the animals that you want to see. So here it's more about explaining who are the animals, the underlying stories, and why are these animals there.
Yeah, I certainly felt that when I went to Mona, that's for sure.
Maria, thank you so much for your thoughtful and I think very down-to-earth observations. I think myself and the listeners, we've really had our eyes opened to some quite difficult and some really important points about things that maybe we sometimes see normalised in society these days. I'm certainly left feeling a lot more empathetical than I was before for any wild animal that finds itself in someone's home or as a worker than I did before. So what is it that we can take away from these stories that Maria tells us? Well, I think really it's probably our duty, if we empathise with these animals, is just to raise the awareness to people who might think it's a really good idea or drops it into conversations that they're thinking about getting a Barbary macaque or a pygmy marmoset, that yes, you know, it is cute, but what comes later is another question, and maybe just guide them towards this episode, because I think, having heard it from Maria, there's not very many people that can tell the story so powerfully.
If you'd like to suggest a species for me to cover in a future episode, just get in touch with me. Perhaps you want to share some of your stories about animals, or just want to say hi. You can write to me at olga@other5billion.com. You can also find and contact me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for the Other 5 Billion podcast. Or you can find me, Olga Pavlovsky, at Lplate Big Cheese. Please do subscribe to the Other 5 Billion podcast on iTunes, the Google Podcast app, or wherever you get your podcasts. And all that's left to say is thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed it, and until next time.